Buzz herself to have a kite.
Right on the spot, she decided to give it to him. Yes, she was going to give Max her kite. And at this thought, she felt her heart jump for joy inside her.
Seeing the two children smiling and happy, Yoopsy felt very light and very happy.
Just like Yoopsy the little dragon, open your eyes, open your heart.
You will see how good it is to help others. That is happiness. Now it's time for the three breaths. Trouble in the land of the bees. All unhappiness comes from love of self, and all happiness comes from the altruistic heart. Shantideva. Leah was a young and pretty bee in Provence, France, and she was very proud of her splendid dress that had stripes of brown, orange, and pale yellow. She was a nectar bee, and it was her job to bring nectar back to the hive from the flowers that she drew it from. And there were plenty of flowers in Provence that were good for making honey. Leah could gather nectar from all kinds of plants, such as rapeseed, thyme, lime blossom, chestnut, lavender, and acacia. But she chose to gather her harvest from the white flowers of the almond tree only, because almond blossoms are the most delicate of all. Every morning she prepared herself. She carefully brushed her wings with her slender, delicate feet. This is because her two pairs of wings had to be perfectly smooth and clean so they could beat perfectly when she flew. Sometimes she would run across Yoopsy the little dragon, whose bee friends would give him honey. Leah left the hive very early in the morning to go and land on the most beautiful almond flowers in the area. Working very hard, she would fill the fold in the front of her dress with the precious nectar, which she then carried back to the hive. Unfortunately, her days were always ruined by Clara, another bee who was very jealous of her and was constantly pestering her. When Leah picked out a beautiful almond flower, Clara immediately appeared and gave the flower a bump so that she too could perch on the same one. And since the flower was too small for two, it swayed back and forth and forced both bees to fly away. Then Leah would have to fly off to find another flower. But Clara was always there to give a push so she could perch on her flower with her.
"Stop following me!" Leah shouted at her. "Don't make such a big fuss. Go and find yourself another flower," Clara replied. "Do you know, I have to make at least 10 trips a day to bring nectar back to the hive, and you're always there, slowing me down," Leah exclaimed. "But you're the only one who knows how to find such beautiful flowers," Clara wailed. "Let me just get the nectar out of this one and go find another one for yourself."
Every day they fought like this over the almond flowers. Finally, Leah had had enough of it. She made up her mind that Clara was her worst enemy, and she began trying to figure out how she could get rid of her once and for all. One gorgeous morning, Leah was busy gathering her precious harvest. She was so wrapped up in her work that she didn't see a nasty red crab spider approaching. Now, the spider is a very dangerous animal for bees. It catches them in its sticky web and eats them up. That morning, the spider was laying in ambush, watching Leah gather nectar. After a while, it wove a strong net between two almond flowers, using very solid and sticky threads of silk. Then It waited patiently for Leah to decide to change from one flower to another. When Leah flew off at her top speed in order to avoid wasting any time, the little bee crashed violently into the spider's web. She was caught in a trap of silken threads. No doubt about it, the spider was going to eat her up. Following her usual habit, Clara had followed Leah from flower to flower. It didn't take her long to see that Leah was in serious danger. What could she do to help? She decided to go get Yoopsy, because she couldn't do anything against a big spider all by herself. She flew as fast as she could to where Yoopsy was staying and asked him to come help Leah. They went off together to help her. When they got to the spider's web, Leah was still struggling to escape. Immediately, Yoopsy started breathing out little flames to make the spider, who was terrified of fire, back off. While this was happening, Clara used her powerful jaws to cut through the silk threads. She kept cutting until she had Leah completely free of the web. Then Clara set Leah gently down on Yoopsy's back. For in the meantime, the little bee had fainted. Together, they took her back to the hive. When Leah came to, the first bee she saw was Clara. Seeing Clara's smile, Leah knew she was the one who had saved her life. She suddenly felt a bit ashamed. She didn't feel good about always trying to keep the most beautiful almond flowers for herself, when really she could have helped Clara to find the best nectar too and shared the harvest with her. "Yes, indeed," she said to herself. "I have really been selfish." From this day on, things changed. Every morning, Leah called Clara to go with her, so she could show her the most beautiful flowers that she could gather the sweetest nectar from. Together, they made a team. Between the two of them, they brought the most nectar back to the hive of all the bees. On top of that, Leah knew she could depend on Clara, because she had a very good eye for spotting spiders hiding among the flowers. With Clara, Leah was no longer in danger. Yoopsy was feeling very light and very happy since the two bees had become friends and had finally learned to love and appreciate the differences between them. Thanks to them, the hive was producing more honey than ever for little honey lovers, and Yoopsy himself was licking his chops. Just like Yoopsy the little dragon, open your eyes, open your heart. You will see how good it is to help others. That is happiness. Now it's time for the three breaths. The snowshoe hare caught in a frozen waterfall. When we perform positive actions motivated by kindness, altruism, and empathy, we feel fully ourselves. Dubonnet, happiness. Frédéric Lenoir. Winter had arrived on Earth, and the cold had covered all the mountains with a thick coating of white snow. Pom Pom, a snowshoe hare who could change his color, had just come out of his burrow and was enjoying himself, jumping around in the snow and catching the flakes that whirled around above his head. Since it was winter, Pom Pom had lost his gray-brown summertime fur and had become completely white, so he blended in with the snow. With the help of his back paws that had the shape of snowshoes, he could jump around to his heart's content without sinking in the powdery snow. And he was really going at it. But all of a sudden, he landed on a very hard sheet of ice and began to slip. He felt unable to stop himself. He slid and he slid and he kept sliding till he landed on a totally frozen waterfall. Lying on his side with his feet flailing in the air, Pom-Pom continued to slide. One second, he was spinning around on the frozen mirror. The next second, he was shooting downward like a lightning bolt. Finally, he hit a little bump in the ice and flew up into the air. He came back down just on the edge of a hollow in the ice, a rather deep hole into which he suddenly disappeared with a long, piercing cry. There he was, a prisoner of the waterfall. Just by chance, Zuari the little buck had seen the whole incident. The terrifying slide down the waterfall and the fall into the icy hole. He bounded over the fresh snow till he got close to the hollow that Pom-Pom had disappeared into. He bent a little over the edge to catch a glimpse down into it. There, with relief, he saw the snowshoe hare wedged at the bottom, flailing about, trying to jump out of the hole.
"Don't worry, Pom-Pom,"
Zuari shouted down to him.
"I'll go get help to get you out of there."
And without waiting, he galloped away. He hadn't gone far when, on a slope of fresh snow, he ran across Yoopsie, who was sledding around on the hillside, laughing and apparently having a really great time. Zuari shouted to him,
"Yoopsie, I really need you. Pom-Pom has fallen into a hole in the ice. How can we help him?"
"First of all, stay calm," said Yoopsie.
And the little dragon began to think.
"There, I've got it. I have an idea. But it's going to take a lot of help. Go find your friends and tell them to meet by the waterfall, near the place where our friend Pom-Pom is trapped. Also, tell them to bring with them all the wood they find on the way. I think that might turn out to be very helpful."
No sooner said than done. Zuari alerted all the animals and gave them Yoopsie's message. It was not long before the fox, the weasel, the mountain goat, the white ermine, and the lynx were all by the side of the waterfall, loaded with branches of wood of all sizes. Yoopsie quickly organized the rescue party. With his front paws, he got a good hold on the trunk of a big tree, and then he pointed his long reptilian tail in the direction of the hole in the ice from which the cries of the trapped hare could be heard. His tail reached a short way into the hole, but it wasn't long enough to reach Pom-Pom. Yoopsie then asked the buck to go down along his back and to hang from the end of his tail to try to reach Pom-Pom. But it wasn't enough. Then it was the lynx's turn to slide down Yoopsie's back, and then hang from the feet of the buck in order to get down still deeper into the hole. That still wasn't enough. So Yoopsie asked the fox to climb down his tail and go all the way down till he was hanging from the lynx's paws. But there was still a short distance to go to reach Pom-Pom. The courageous weasel went down next. He went carefully down along Yoopsie's tail, then passing over the heads and bodies of all his friends. He finally ended up hanging firmly onto the paws of the fox. He felt his little claws touching the bottom of the hole. Pom-Pom was finally able to climb up the backs of his friends, up the tail of the little dragon, and finally get out into the open air. He was saved! Then, one by one, his friends climbed back up to the surface. Seeing all the animals shivering with cold after their team effort, Yoopsie began to huff and puff with all his might with his magic breath onto the pile of wood lying near the waterfall. The wood immediately caught fire. huge flames mounted toward the sky and warmed up the little band of happy rescuers. Thanks to his calmness and his courage, but especially owing to the teamwork of all the animals, Zuari the buck had been able to help the snowshoe hare escape from the ice of the waterfall. Then all the animals made a circle around the fire and danced with light and happy hearts, happy that they had listened to Yupsi and saved their friend. Just like Yupsi the little dragon, open your eyes, open your heart. You will see how good it is to help others. That is happiness. Now it's time for the three breaths. The Child from Ladakh. Leave more room for others in your heart. The Restful Mind. His Eminence Gyalwa Dokampa. Emma is a little girl who is never satisfied, and who tends to get angry often and to cry and whimper till she gets her way. No matter how many times her mama explains to her that this doesn't do any good, Emma continues to behave that way anyhow. One day, Yupsi, the little dragon who knew her well, made her a strange offer.
"You cry a lot, my little Emma. You are unhappy, and I'm sure it's because you think you don't have enough toys. Would you like to become the happiest little girl on earth?"
Emma nodded her head to say yes. So Yupsi continued.
"Then go ahead and climb up on my back. Since my breath is as powerful as the engine of a jet plane, I can make you fly. I am going to take you with me to see other children, and you'll see how you get to be just as happy as they are."
Emma climbed up between the wings on Yupsi's back, and together the two of them flew for a long time over oceans and seas. They flew until they reached Ladakh in northern India, in a region of very high mountains called the Himalayas. In Ladakh, the earth is so dry that almost nothing grows. Yupsi and Emma finally arrived in Tiri, a small mountain village where a little boy named Siring Dorje lived. He was a friend of Yupsi's. Even though he had very few toys in his home, Siring Dorje seemed to be very happy. His parents did all they could for him. Every day they gave him plenty of food, and above all, plenty of love. His favorite toy was a little iron box that he pushed along with a stick. And when he went to take care of the beautiful Pashmina goats that belonged to his family, the little box kept him company on the path and made sounds like soft music that helped gather his flock around him. Siring was very fond of his life in Ladakh, but he had one big regret. He was not able to go to school. The fact was that in his village, which was very isolated in the mountains, a school had never been built. So in order to get to a school, he would have to go to a town very far away from his village. And this would be too expensive for his parents. And anyway, his parents needed him to take care of the goats. Emma made friends with Siring right away. He taught her to find her way in the mountains, to listen for and recognize the songs of the birds, to read the patterns in the clouds and stars. Together, they enjoyed the roasted barley porridge that Siring's parents gave him for the midday meal. They also played together, pushing the little iron box around. Little by little, Emma began to realize how easy her life was, and how lucky she was to be able to go to school each day. She promised herself to ask her parents how they might be able to help Searing go to school one day, because he was very smart, and school might be able to change his life. It also occurred to her that she could ask her teacher and her classmates about it. Together, they might be able to come up with an idea for raising money to build a school in Searing's village. All these ideas blossomed in Emma's heart and gave her a great deal of joy. She suddenly felt happy, very happy. She was the happiest little girl in the world. But it was time to go home, because it was getting late. Yupsi promised Emma he would take her back to Ladakh sometime to see Searing. So she climbed back on the dragon's back, with her heart full of love and joy. Just like Yupsi the little dragon, open your eyes, open your heart. You will see how good it is to help others. That is happiness. Now it's time for the three breaths. The child with the bandage. You should never judge people by their appearance. The peasant of the Danube. Fables. Jean de La Fontaine. It was Sunday afternoon, and Maya was riding on her red scooter, which was ornamented with a beautiful purple horse's head. She had gotten her mom's permission to ride her scooter down their street to the local park. Of course, she had had to promise to keep her helmet on the whole time, to definitely stay on the sidewalk, and above all, to be really careful when she crossed the street to get into the park. With her head full of these promises, Maya went speeding along, her heart light in her chest. It was at that moment that a blue scooter passed her, going very fast. Maya sped up in order to catch up with it. When she came up beside it, Maya turned her head to see who was riding it and saw a little boy with a big bandage that came down from underneath his helmet and went across his whole forehead. He was wearing big, thick glasses, and his face was covered with freckles. Maya found herself breaking out laughing at the sight of this funny-looking little boy. Here was a kid who obviously didn't know how to ride a scooter, and who must have taken a tumble on the sidewalk just because of something like a little tree root. An idiot. This kid is really a total idiot, Maya thought. And she sped up some more in order to pass him. Then she heard a voice from behind her.
Hey, wait up, the little boy shouted to her. My name is Archie, and I want to play with you.
But Maya had no desire to play with this kid who really must be rather dumb, since he hadn't been able to avoid falling, and he might even make her fall herself. So she tried to go as fast as she could in order to leave him behind. But Archie, who actually handled his scooter quite well, caught up with her. He signaled to her to stop so they could talk. Maya felt herself getting angry. She stopped short and told him right to his face,
"You leave me alone. I don't want to play with you. It's easy to see. You don't know how to ride a scooter since you obviously keep falling."
"Hey, what are you talking about?" Archie replied. "Actually, I have really good balance, and I saw that you manage pretty well yourself. That's why I wanted to play with you in the park."
"Is that so? So then how do you explain that big, ugly bandage you've got on your forehead? You must have fallen down, and that means you're hopeless as a scooter rider. Me, I don't play with such hopeless cases. And that's all there is to it."
And with these words, Maya sped away on her scooter and rode off into the park. Rolling along the lanes of the park lit with springtime sun, she ran into Yupsi the little dragon, who was taking a rest. stretched out in the green, green grass.
"Hi, Oopsie," shouted Maya. "Beautiful day, isn't it?"
"So it is," replied Oopsie, "but not for everybody."
"I see," said Maya. "Something's bothering you. If you want to tell me about it, here I am. I'll be glad to listen."
Oopsie knew Maya well. He knew that she had a good heart. So he went ahead and spoke.
"I want to talk to you about a little boy who is feeling very bad today."
Saying that, he blew with his magic breath, and it took the shape of a big white cloud, which became like a movie screen for Maya.
"I want to talk to you about Archie."
And a little boy with lots of freckles appeared on the screen. Maya recognized him right away. Oopsie went on talking while the images continued on the screen.
"Here's what happened to him. 2 weeks ago, he was taking care of his little sister at their house. Since she was just beginning to walk, Archie was keeping an eye on her. But he went into the kitchen for a moment to get a glass of water. During that time, she managed to climb up on the windowsill, and when Archie came back, he found her teetering on it, just about to tumble into space. Paying no attention to anything but his courageous heart, he leapt up and caught hold of her and pulled her back from the window, keeping his arms around her to protect her. As he was carrying out this heroic action, his head bumped into the radiator and he injured his forehead. That big bandage that you saw is the mark of his courage."
Then the screen made of Oopsie's magic breath dissolved, and Maya's eyes were full of tears. She realized she had judged Archie unjustly. She was very sorry that she had been so mean to him. What could she do? Oopsie looked at her tenderly, and with his big dragon paw, pointed to a blue scooter that could be seen moving among the lanes of the park. Maya didn't waste a second. She jumped on her scooter and rode off after Archie. She found the words to get him to forgive her for her mistake and for treating him unkindly. She also asked him to join in her games with her, and this brought a smile back to his face. From a distance, Oopsie watched them talk, then break out laughing, and then move off together side by side on their little vehicles. Seeing the two children full of joy again, he felt very light and very happy. Just like Oopsie the little dragon, open your eyes, open your heart. You will see how good it is to help others. That is happiness. Now it's time for the three breaths. The Wild Kittens. We have to put humans back into the heart of the animal world. L'animal est une personne. An animal is a person. Franz-Olivier Gisbert. As they very often did when they were on vacation at their grandfather's house, Louise and Ilham were playing in the shed just behind the farmhouse. This old lean-to also served as a dump, though the children always discovered many treasures when they played there. While they were busy trying to get an old electric car out from where it was stuck between two huge cans, Louise thought she heard a small noise, squeaky and sad. It sounded like crying, and was coming from some piled-up boxes of books.
"What could that be?"
she asked herself. She was pretty sure that they were alone in the shed, and Ilham hadn't heard anything. And anyway, he was only interested in the little electric car.
"Come over here and help me," he called to his sister, instead of fooling around by those boxes. The car is stuck.
Fine, okay, said Louise, coming back. Do you think that car belonged to Papa?
But the little cries came again, and this time Elam heard them too. The children ran over to the place behind the boxes where the cries were coming from. There they found three gray kittens, meowing for their mother. They had just been born, and were lying there on the hard earth floor, all bare and trembling, without any fur or anything to protect them.
Oh, they are really creepy,
Elam cried as he picked one up by the neck.
They look like rats, horrible little rats.
And he shook the kitten. Terrified, the kitten mewed louder and louder. All of a sudden, Elam dropped it, because he had seen the mother cat coming toward him, ready to spring. The two children ran and hid in their grandfather's car. From this vantage point, they watched the mother cat take her kittens one by one in her mouth by the back of their neck and move them to a safe place behind the woodpile. All of them except the one Elam had shaken. He lay alone there on the cold ground, mewing loudly, calling to his mother, who didn't seem interested in caring for him at all. In fact, she had disappeared, and the little creature was exhausting itself, squealing constantly. From the little car, helpless, the children watched this scene, afraid that it would have a very bad ending. Leaping up, Louise ran to the farmhouse to get some advice from her grandfather. He told her,
"Louise, these are wild kittens. If you pet one or touch it, you leave your smell on it. The mother cat will probably abandon it. You shouldn't have touched it."
Louise didn't dare say that they had done worse than just touch the kitten. They had shaken it and dropped it. She was ashamed, but she did not want to tattle on her brother. She went back to the shed, almost in tears. By this time, Elam was in a panic, because the little kitten, exhausted, lay stretched out on the ground and seemed to be dead. And the mother cat was gone once and for all.
"I can't think of any other solution but to call Yoopsie," said Louise. "He's the only one who can help us."
The little girl set her mind strongly on Yoopsie the little dragon, who arrived immediately with a beating of wings. He began by gently scolding Elam for his bad behavior toward the little animal. Then quickly, he turned to the kitten, because it really needed help. He asked Elam to take the little cat in his arms in order to warm it up, and he began to blow deep magic breaths. He blew gentle, long, and warm magic breaths on the little animal, and then licked its whole body. The kitten was warmed up again by this massage, and then it opened one eye, and then the other. Elam, laughing, kissed its little head. He was so happy to see it alive.
"This little cat will be counting on you from now on," Yoopsie declared. "You will have to take care of it like you were its mama. You will have to feed it and give it lots of attention."
Then he turned to look at Elam and gave him a wink. Then he said,
"Your first job is to find some milk for it, because it looks really hungry."
Yoopsie had no sooner finished talking when the two children raced off to their grandfather's house, holding the little cat wrapped in their arms.
"For sure, Grandpa will be able to help us feed our kitten,"
puffed the little boy, out of breath, to his sister.
"We haven't got a second to lose. It's our responsibility now."
Louise went out on the porch to say goodbye to Yoopsie, who was just about to take off into the air. She gave him a big wave and thanked him warmly. Yupsie smiled back at her. The brother and sister felt great happiness. For sure they were going to take good care of the kitten. And from then on, they would show respect to all animals. Just like Yupsie the little dragon, open your eyes, open your heart. You will see how good it is to help others. That is happiness. Now it's time for the three breaths. The Via Ferrata of Joy.
Goodbye, said the fox. And now, here is my secret. A very simple secret. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye.
The Little Prince, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. That morning, the first rays of the sun did not hesitate to wake up Gaspard and Philomena, who were still totally asleep in their little wooden bed. In the distance, the cheery ringing of the bells of cows grazing in the mountain meadows invited them to get up. The two of them were just starting their vacation in Savoy, Switzerland, at the house of their cousins, the twins, Theo and Leo. The children were soon on their feet and were visibly excited because today was a big day. Their uncle, who was a mountain guide, was taking them to climb their first Via Ferrata, a protected climbing route up the mountain. Breakfast was already ready, and a good smell had spread through the chalet. Questions rang out from all sides. Philomena spoke up first, because she was a little nervous. She lived in Paris, and so she was not used to the mountains.
Uncle William, is the Via Ferrata really hard to climb?
No, not at all, not at all, her uncle assured her. Your cousins have already gone up them many times, and they just love it.
There are iron bars fastened into the rock that are like steps. You only have to climb from one step to the next,
young Theo explained. The two cousins had always gotten along well together.
But it's dangerous, then,
Philomena insisted, still rather nervous.
No, nothing can happen to you, said Leo, the other twin.
My dad will put a harness on you. It's made of straps and fits over your clothes. It's really solid, and it will be attached to a rope, so you can't fall.
Seeing her cousin's unshakable confidence, Philomena calmed down and got busy gulping down her breakfast so she would have plenty of strength, as her uncle had advised her. Finally, the little group of explorers was ready. All the equipment they needed was loaded into the car that was to take them on the expedition. They went on a beautiful road that climbed by zigzags and switchbacks up the side of the mountain. They stopped at the edge of a beautiful blue lake, Lac de la Rosière.
Come on, I'll help you put on your climbing harnesses and helmets, said their guide.
Why the helmets? Asked Philomena.
Because stones might fall on your head. Stones loosened by people climbing above you, replied the guide very professionally.
Gaspard was not listening to any of this. He seemed to be worried about something. Very steep mountains rose on both sides of the beautiful blue lake, and Gaspard could already feel his knees beginning to wobble and shake.
"Can I go behind you, Uncle William?" Gaspard asked.
"If you like," his uncle replied in a reassuring tone, adjusting Gaspard's helmet. "We'll put Philomena between the twins, and I'll take care of you."
The happy group of climbers, all roped together, started off after their guide. The children took hold of the iron rungs one by one and climbed without a problem.
"In the end, it's not that complicated," Philomena thought.
She was not finding it hard. But Gaspard kept looking down and seeing the lake becoming smaller and smaller beneath him. Next, they had to cross a rope bridge called a monkey bridge. And then after that came the Nepali bridge over the lake, which swung from side to side a little as they walked over it. They were continuing their climb uneventfully when suddenly a cry rang out. Uncle William was shouting, "Look out! Falling rock!" But it came too late. The cry had come from Philomena, who had had a big stone fall on her helmet. This made a tremendous noise in her head, and partly from fear and partly from surprise, she completely let go of her handholds. Fortunately, as she was reassured to discover, the harness and the rope held her quite securely. But nevertheless, there she was, dangling in space about 3 feet below the rungs of the Via Ferrata, her skinny legs flailing in the air.
"Theo, switch your carabiners down to the rungs your feet are on now. Step out of the Via Ferrata and reach over and give your cousin your hand so she can climb back on,"
his father calmly told him.
"Okay, Dad, here I go,"
Theo replied. But at this point, Theo realized that there was a lot of empty space beneath him, and his cousin was really pretty far away. He got kind of dizzy and didn't have the courage to leave the safety of the Via Ferrata and step directly onto the rock of the mountainside. Fear overcame him, and he was completely paralyzed.
"Help me, Yupsi,"
Theo called out inside his head. For several months now, he had been friends with Yupsi the little dragon, and he knew that Yupsi was protecting him. Then, suddenly, he had no doubt. Yupsi would help Philomena for sure. With the dragon's tail as a staircase, she would easily be able to get back onto the iron rungs. But, to Theo's great surprise, this time, the little dragon did not appear. Theo only heard a little voice inside of him which murmured, "Theo, we have already done a lot of things together, and I know you have confidence in me. But starting today, you have to have confidence in yourself." Hearing these words, Theo suddenly had the feeling that the little dragon had slipped inside him. Yupsi continued to talk.
"Since you want to do something good by helping Philomena, your heart will guide you, and you will succeed. Don't forget, Theo, I am with you. Use the magic breath."
Theo had confidence in Yupsi. He breathed out with all his might, imagining that the fear and dizziness were going out of him in a puff of black smoke. Then he felt full of inspiration and was able to store up all the energy and force that came into him in the form of white air when he breathed in. He repeated the breathing a few times until he felt the fear leave him. Then he unsnapped the first carabiner and snapped it onto the rung below, and he did the same with the second one. Next, he put his foot on the rock that his father pointed out to him, and reached out with his hand as far as he could, and succeeded in grasping Philomena's hand. The little girl felt reassured at once, and climbed with a leap across the rock and got back on the Via Ferrata. Theo, who was overjoyed, began yelling, "Yippee! Yippee!" From the bottom of his heart, he thanked the little dragon for all the help and support he had given him. The adventure was soon over, and everybody settled down on the shore of the Lac de la Rosière for a well-deserved picnic. All that they had gone through had given the children a very good appetite. Raising his eyes to the electric blue sky, Theo saw a little cloud in the form of a little dragon, who seemed to be giving him a loving wink.
just like Yupsie the little dragon. Open your eyes, open your heart. You will see how good it is to help others. That is happiness. Now it's time for the three breaths. Ten. Meditations for older kids, starting at age 5. Now your child is ready to move past her first meditation with her teddy bear. This is the new routine for every evening. Open your heart to others. Read of a tale on compassion. Sound. Play the Yupsie song. Meditation on the breath. White light and black smoke. Meditation on appreciation. Appreciating your day. Gradual introduction of the self-reflection meditation. The routine is going to stay the same, but with slightly more elaborate meditations and a gradual introduction of the self-reflection meditation. The form this meditation takes will depend a lot on your child's individual personality and his degree of maturity. It's up to you as a parent to gauge when the moment is right to extend your child's practice and to present this meditation in a way that works for him. Exercise. Meditation on the breath. White light and black smoke. Here you're going to do the exercise on the breath, the same one you did when you were younger, but a little more complete, because you have grown up more, and you are now able to do it in almost the same way as your mom and dad. Now take the posture that you know so well. Begin by breathing out through both nostrils, and thinking that everything nasty and bad goes out through your nose in a puff of black smoke. Are you really imagining the black smoke coming out of your nose? 1. Block your left nostril with the index finger of your left hand and breathe in deeply through your right nostril. Think of all the good things that can happen to you as entering your nose in the form of a white light. Let your left hand rest in your lap and hold the air in your belly for 1 or 2 seconds. 2. Then, with the index finger of your right hand, block your right nostril and exhale the air in the form of black smoke through your left nostril. All the things that you don't like, go away. Pause briefly. 3. Keep your right nostril blocked and breathe in again through your left nostril. Think of all the good things that happen to you as a beautiful white light that enters you through your nose. Rest your right hand in your lap and hold the air in your belly for a second. 4. Now block your left nostril with the index finger of your left hand and breathe everything that bothers you and seems wrong and bad out through your right nostril. Imagine that all that leaves you in the form of black smoke. Rest your left hand in your lap. Pause briefly. 5. Through both nostrils, breathe in deeply all the good, positive thoughts, visualizing them as a white light that enters your body. Hold the air in your belly for a second. 6. Exhale strongly through both nostrils to blow out all the bad, negative thoughts, visualizing them as black smoke going out your nose. Pause briefly. And there you are. You're all done. It's a good idea to do this exercise 3 times. When you start a new series of breaths, start again by blocking your left nostril. Observe what you are feeling. Are you feeling better because the black smoke took away everything that was bothering you? Did the beautiful white light bring you a good feeling? If you got mixed up with the fingers and the nostrils, don't worry. That happens to all children in the beginning. But you'll learn fast, and the exercise will quickly become very natural. You also have to learn to find your own breathing rhythm.
very slow and relaxed. As you grow up, you will find this form of meditation very easy, and you can do it anywhere. It will help you a lot to do well in school, on your exams, and even in your work later on. Exercise. Meditation on appreciation. 1. Sit down on your cushion, as you usually do, or on the edge of your bed. Close your eyes and think of everything good that has happened to you during the day today. 2. Think of your teacher and all the nice things she did for you. Think of all the good things that happened at school. Think of your parents and everything they did for you. Think of the good times you had with your friends. 3. Now you can also reach out with your thoughts to your grandparents, to your brothers and sisters, if your child has any, to your godfather and your godmother, if your child has them, your uncles and aunts, your cousins and your whole family. Did they do anything nice for you today? No doubt they all love you a lot. Appreciate that. 4. Appreciate also that you are in good health, if that is the case. Appreciate not being sick. 5. Appreciate having nice friends who you can have fun with. Think of all the children in the world. 6. Stay silent if you can for at least a minute in order to appreciate all that. 7. Observe what you are feeling. Are you feeling full of love and joy? Are you feeling really happy? Exercise. Dedication to all the children in the world. Now, Yupsi is doing a dedication. He is sending loving wishes for you and all the children in the whole world. Do as Yupsi is doing. Wish from the bottom of your heart for all children to be happy. You can say these words out loud. I wish all the children in the world not to suffer, not to be sick, and to be happy always. Good night. Exercise. Walking meditation. If you would like to loosen up your legs, Yupsi knows another meditative exercise that's very simple and fun. It's one of his favorite exercises. You can train in walking meditation at home, in the park, with your friends on the playground, or even on the street. The best thing is to take advantage of a quiet place like the seaside or the mountains if you ever have a chance to visit those places or if you live there. Make the most of each step. 1. In a standing position, stay still for a few seconds. Breathe gently into your belly. Remember the movement of your little teddy bear when it moved back and forth with your breath. Your feet feel heavy and rest firmly on the floor. Have your arms in front of you, relaxed. Then put the back of your left hand just below your navel, palm up. Then cover the palm of your left hand with the palm of your right hand. Close your hands one over the other without tensing up. 2. Gaze at a point in front of you. Feel or imagine the breeze coming off the sea and caressing your face. Or just feel nature around you. 3. Now begin to walk. Lift your right heel, breathe in, swelling your belly. Remember your teddy bear moving forward. Raise your right foot and move your leg slowly forward. Feel your breath rising up toward your lungs and feel your rib cage swelling. Let your thoughts come and go, but don't get into a big conversation with yourself. 4. Put your right foot down, and breathe out as you place it on the floor. In breathing out, push upward with your belly. Your belly will hollow out. Remember your teddy bear moving back in. Then your rib cage will contract. Press your foot firmly on the floor. Appreciate the ground under your foot. Let your thoughts come and go. 5. Now lift your left heel and inhale deeply, filling your belly. Lift your left foot and move your legs slowly forward. Feel your breath moving up toward your lungs and your rib cage swelling. Let your thoughts come and go. 6. Put your left foot down and breathe out as you do so. As you breathe out, push your belly upward. Your belly hollows out and your rib cage contracts. Take your time. Appreciate the ground under your foot. Go ahead and repeat this for a few minutes, one foot after the other. In walking meditation, it is important to observe your breathing. If you're not sure you're doing the breathing right, Yupsi has a tip for you. During the first 2 or 3 breaths, in order to check up on the movement of your lungs as well as the movement of your belly, put your hands against your body on each side of your waist. Check first to make sure that your belly is swelling and contracting, and then check that your lungs are swelling and contracting. Learning to breathe properly is important for your health. You can also check up on your breathing during your everyday life. Think of blowing out your birthday candles, or blowing the fuzz off a dandelion while pushing with your belly. Observe all your emotions. Use the slow rhythm of your steps and breathing to calm yourself little by little. Stay connected to your surroundings. This is a very fine way to have a very good day. You don't necessarily have to do walking meditation all by yourself. You can also do it with friends. Single file, one behind the other. But watch out now. Remember to keep up your concentration and stay silent. Eleven. The gift stickers test. Your child's level of compassion after 10 weeks of the program. Yupsi has once again brought you a whole lot of gifts. But who are you going to give them to this time? Give the sheet of stickers to your child. You can give them to your best friend, to a child you don't know, to a child who is sick or has had an accident, or to somebody in your class who you always find annoying. Now, stick the stickers on the gift boxes. You can give as many as you want to whomever you want. What has changed since the first test? Conclusion. A lifelong project for your child. You, as a parent, will most likely want to join your child in the adventure of meditation. You now know that the results are really worth the effort. And you have found a new sense of closeness and togetherness with your child from doing the meditation exercises together. Thanks to Yupsi's magic breath, your child will gradually develop a solid psychological balance that will help her deal with the difficulties of the contemporary world. It is also possible that your child is already calmer, less inclined to get angry, and sleeping better. This would be very encouraging, but it's essential that your child continue to practice in order to maintain these results. By training the mind in altruism and self-concentration, your child will develop a different relationship with others, become compassionate, and have more respect for animals and the environment. Let us hope that this enlightened form of education will catch on and spread so that a new generation of children will create a society in which everyone can live with less stress and more joy. This goal is not out of reach, and your child and your family have already begun to realize it